live from our living room, it's From Long Distance to Marriage with Andrea and Rich. We're a once long-distance couple who closed 5,000 miles of distance and made it through to marriage.
We talk long-distance, marriage, and relationships.
Hi, we're Andrea and Rich, and welcome to episode 1 of From Long Distance to Marriage. This is a new podcast that discusses long-distance relationships through to marriage and everything in between.
In this first episode, we're going to dive into our story,
which takes us back to 2004, the time I was a senior in high school in a little town in Arizona, and I was a member of DeviantArt. How long had you been on DeviantArt at that time? Had you been on it very long?
I've got no idea. How old was I?
We were 17.
I probably haven't been on there very long. Probably a year or so.
I know my friends got me into it. Because I was really into writing and poetry and photography. And for those of you that don't know, DeviantArt is kind of a platform for artists of any kind, whether you're into, like I said, writing or poetry, painting. It's a community to talk about it, share. You can even sell your stuff on there, can't you?
You can sell stuff on there. And there's just lots of forums for different things. I found it because I was looking for tattoos, and then I got into the music and film forums on there.
Yeah. And the forums is really where it all started for us. So I was in my senior year of high school, and my friends and I wanted to make a really good playlist for that summer to listen to by the pool, and in my case, not tan, because I'm see-through, but we still wanted to have some good music to sit by the pool to. And I was really into that kind of classic rock era that was really influenced by drugs, which all the music in the 70s and 60s really was. But I needed some ideas, and none of my friends were really into the same kind of music as I was. So I was at a loss. I'd been on DeviantArt for a while and went to the forums. And I posted in one of the music groups on there asking if anyone had any suggestions. And I remember being specifically asking, please don't suggest rap music. I don't like rap music. I'm looking for classic rock. And the first time I went back on there to check what the suggestions were, it was all rap, even though I'd said please no, except for a couple. And there was one from a boy in England. And I think you suggested Doors music. Do you remember specifically?
Probably the Doors.
I think your comment was like anything by the Doors.
Yeah, anything by the Doors. I don't remember exactly what else, but I was listening to that music at the time.
That's something I think that we bonded over initially.
And clearly I had the advantage of being able to read what you'd said and have the answer to what you wanted. And
what do you mean advantage?
Well, no one else. Yeah. No one else was answering your question.
Not the question, not one of the answers I wanted.
So I knew what you'd asked for and what you'd not asked for. So we knew we could
understand
each other.
And you didn't like rap either. Yeah. But I just remember reading it and I liked your answers. And I don't think I really knew much about the Doors, but I was familiar with, you know, who they were. Anybody who grew up in the 90s watching Forrest Gump knew who the Doors were. And I just remember thinking, ooh. This guy's English, he's my age, he must have a cute accent. And I went to your profile, and you didn't really have that many pictures of yourself. I mean, this was before it was really...
Yeah, people don't understand this now, that the internet's moved on, technology's moved on. When we were 17...
In 2004. Yeah.
The iPhone didn't exist, FaceTime didn't exist, we were MSN generation.
Yeah. I mean, getting
our cameras were 2-megapixel webcams.
Well, yeah, but even to get a photo onto a dating website, or not that they were really even around much then, but to get a photo of yourself online, you either had to have a digital camera, which a lot of people didn't have, a webcam, which was grainy as anything, or a scanner to scan a proper photo that you'd have to take and get developed.
Well, that's a good point. It wasn't like now where you took a picture on your phone and you uploaded it on your phone. You had to have a digital camera, which was expensive because your phones didn't have cameras. If they did, they weren't good.
They weren't great, yeah.
So you had to have a digital camera, you had to put the memory card in. So no, I didn't have many pictures on my profile. The people that did were the people on DeviantArt were people that were serious photographers.
Yeah.
So you had more pictures than I did because you had a photography portfolio. And I was just on there talking about tattoos and music in the forums. I didn't have mine.
Yeah, I'm trying to think I don't even think I had my digital camera then, so I don't know how. But in any case, I went to your profile and you didn't really have many pictures. And those that did, you were kind of like... Slash, you covered your face up as much as you could. You were shy.
I think I had that one picture on my red light as well.
Yeah, I think so. And there was one of you like wearing these sunglasses and your hair was just huge. You won't, pictures that you'll see now on our socials and stuff and things on our website, You'll see that Rich has beautiful curly big hair, but it's quite short now compared to what it used to be. So we'll have to share some really old pictures with your big hair.
Well, I think our first picture on Instagram.
Yeah, on Instagram it is. Anyways.
Yeah, an old one.
So I think I reached out to you. I think I messaged you, like, thanking you for, like, the music that you had suggested, like, and saying, like, you're the only person. But what were you kind of thinking when I messaged you and you were looking at my profile and stuff?
I don't remember when you messaged me. I remember looking at your picture, and it's still one of my favorite pictures, but you had, it wasn't even like a selfie today, it's a picture of you. You were sort of leaning forward. And I just remember thinking you were pretty hot, and I was quite happy to keep talking to you.
It was so deep, wasn't it?
It was pretty deep. I was 17.
Yeah, so was I. But I think I was a year ahead of you in school, because...
But we do school differently.
School's a little bit, offset by a year or two, but you'd redone a year anyway. But so it was my last year of school.
We forgot to mention that I was living near London at this point.
Yeah.
With
your family.
I was living at home, you were living at home, but we were 5,000 miles apart, so we were doing the school system in two different countries, so there were some slight differences.
But I think we just talked as much as we could. I remember, like, getting home from school, and the time difference was really hard when you're in school as well, because you can't really stay up as late as you want.
And again, it's not like now where you've got iMessage and WhatsApp, so you can message. Data was a real issue.
Yeah, it wasn't a thing. It wasn't an issue. It just didn't exist.
Well, yeah, so communicating without data was a real issue.
We couldn't hear from each other until we got home and logged into our laptops or whatever.
Yeah.
So yeah, I just remember we would exchange messages through DeviantArt, and then we started talking to MSN, and we just hit it off straight away, and we never ran out of things to talk about. You were filthy in this charming way that a good little Catholic girl from America couldn't quite resist. And we just couldn't stop talking. And I think once I actually finished school, because I think we started talking in February, so it was halfway through my senior year and your whatever year of school you were in. And once summer came around, we both just had the weirdest sleeping habits. Because it was 8 hours difference between Arizona, sometimes seven.
Yeah, so I'd stay up till about 3 or 4 in the morning, which would be like pretty reasonable evening time for you.
Evening, yeah, probably like 7-ish. So then I'd carry on, see my friends or hang out, whatever. And then I'd stay up until you got up, which was about 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning my time. So like 10, 11 in the morning
for
you.
So we sort of spoke at the beginning of end of each of our days, yeah. But it was then the opposite for the other person.
Yeah, so I vividly remember like being in my bedroom on my laptop talking to you. Either just messaging, maybe sometimes webcam. And my dad got up really early for work every morning. And even when I was that old, which is really sweet, he'd come in and check on me. So I'd hear him moving around and getting up. And I'd say, I'll be back in like 5 minutes, shut my laptop, jump back in bed, pretend to be asleep. Because he'd be like, I was 17, but he would have been like, what are you doing? Like,
did they know about me at this point?
I'm sure they did. I told my parents everything at that age. Your parents did not know about me, though, did they?
Probably not. I'm a lot more reserved.
Yeah. Especially at that age, you were really quite...
At that age,
not secretive, but private.
And we weren't together. I mean, because I feel like at the time, then, long-distance relationships weren't... not that they were less accepted, but I think nowadays they're much more common.
Especially for internet as well.
Yeah, so...
But I think we didn't see it as a long-distance relationship at that stage. We were just...
We just got on.
We just got on really well. We openly had a crush on each other and were very attracted to each other from what we could tell. It was just a friendship that was quite playful, I think. And I think at that age as well, we were only 17, we knew that there was nothing that could really happen.
Yeah, it was a difficult time. Neither of us had jobs, money. There was no...
I had a part-time little job, but it was nothing. But there was almost a safety in the distance that, like, we can enjoy this person, but there's nothing that's going to happen.
Yeah.
And I remember, though, we would talk about meeting one day, and I was working a little part-time job. And I remember I had a little box, I'd saved cash. I think I got up to like $150 or $120 or something. And before I realized like, well, this is going to be way too hard to save for. And I was getting ready to go off to college as well Phoenix.
The little box reminds me that we were at this point sending each other things.
I don't think we were yet.
By the time you were saving up, I think we were. You had to, when did I send you that little Buddha?
I think that was later, like when we were talking again really seriously. We might have sent a letter. I don't know if we did at that stage. I can't actually remember. But over the next, what must have been about 2 years, We just stayed in touch. We were friends. I had moved to Phoenix to go to Arizona State. I met a guy there that became my boyfriend. That was just kind of a nothing. You didn't like him though, because, well, he was my boyfriend and you were finishing up school at the time, but we just stayed friends and we were in and out of touch and you were always there if I was like fighting with my boyfriend or whatever.
Yeah. So we weren't, as you said, we weren't immediately a long distance.
No, we were just friends at the stage.
Cause I don't think it was sort of, as big of a thing then. As now, you wouldn't immediately get into a long distance relationship then, especially that level of distance.
No.
Whereas now I feel like there's more opportunity, it's much more acknowledged that you can find on Instagram today, immediately be in a relationship.
But it was also never our intention. We weren't looking, neither of us were looking for a relationship in that place. I mean,
no, but I think it was something that at the time, anyone who entered a long distance relationship like we did, especially online, we all had to figure it out for ourselves that it was even possible. Whereas I think now everyone knows it's possible. There was no Reddit then where you could go on and find a subreddit to talk to other people doing this. We figured it out by ourselves.
And thank God there was no catfish yet, because none of this would have happened if there had been a catfish program.
We will have another episode on catfish.
Yeah. So yeah, I was in college. You were finishing school. And we stayed in touch, stayed friends. I ended up moving back home and going to a more local college. Halfway through my first year at ASU. So this takes us, the next time we started talking really seriously was 2006. Like, again, we'd stayed in and out of touch the whole time. It must have been
quite early 2006. Because I finished school in May.
I think it was probably around that time.
And then I started university in September.
Yeah, because I was, classes were still in when we were talking, I remember. So it was probably, yeah, like, spring, March, April time.
And this is when we started to get more serious.
We got really serious.
So we were sending each other stuff at this point.
We were talking constantly.
I've still got the t-shirt you sent me. But yeah, we sent each other all sorts of things.
Yeah, you know? Letters a lot as well.
Letters, and just if we went out, we'd send stuff. I sent you that picture of London. Mm-hmm. You sent me that little cigarette box.
I think that was my, those were all birthday presents.
They were birthday presents.
But yeah, so basically the spring and summer of 2006, leading up to when you were getting ready to go to university, was extremely intense in terms of like the depth of our feelings. And I think for me, again, I don't know that your family knew about it for a little while, but
I think they knew who you were at this point.
They knew that you were talking to someone.
They knew who you were.
And I remember like my family didn't understand it. My family's very, they were just concerned about my safety and my feelings, and you know, the internet thing was still pretty new if you think about it.
It was starting to move on by this point, because I remember that period of time we had, I think we started to get sort of mobile data, we could have voice Skype, so I could talk to you while I was out.
No, that was later. Again, Skype wasn't even around yet in 2006, I don't think.
I'm getting my dates all confused.
Yeah, you should have prepared for this, young man.
When did Skype come out?
I don't know. But no, at this point you might've had emails on your phone, but I didn't. I had like just a basic Motorola flip phone.
I don't think I did. I don't think I did. I think it was my second or third of university that I got a phone that was capable.
Okay. So yeah, then that's when that would have led to the next bit. But yeah, so it was an intense summer and we just spent all of our time talking. I remember my friends would get annoyed because I would prefer to stay home and talk to you a lot of times and go out, go shopping, go to movies or whatever.
But I don't know about you. I mean, for me, that was that sort of age where teenage boys just don't want to be around their family. So I spent most of my time, if I was at home, I was in my bedroom on the computer anyway.
So you were 19. We were both 19 when this picked up again.
So I was, if I wasn't out, I was on my own in my room. So
yeah,
you know, talk to someone on the internet was great, and then we started playing online games together. One of the things we started to do was we'd find multiplayer games.
Yeah.
That we could play together.
But I think that time was just really how deeply we got to know each other and how we could just really tell how just really well suited we were for each other, I think.
It really was quite effortless. There was no awkward silences, there was no, it never felt pressured. no. or force to try and talk to her. And we both got excited when the other one was online.
Mm-hmm.
And disappointed if they weren't online.
Yeah.
Which is something that you kind of take for granted now that we know living together, we'll see each other that evening.
Or even a long-distance relationship. Now people are so instantly contactable.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that...
At this point still, even though it was 2 years after we started talking, we basically could only really talk when we were at home on the computer.
Yeah, so people now in long-distance relationships, there's the distance, but there's not the complete
lack isolation, of communication. Kind of, yeah.
So you can... Nowadays, it's completely different. So if ever you go home to America without me, we can iMessage all day long if we want to.
Oh, it's completely different.
The time
now,
difference
yeah.
is obviously still there, but it's easy. So, as they say, kids these days don't know how good they've got it.
No, our relationship was uphill in the snow both ways kind of thing.
Yeah.
But, so yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, I've talked a bit about, like, the depth of my feelings and kind of having a sneak away from my friends. Like, what kind of... What were the feelings like for you? And, like, I guess, what were the challenges being apart?
In 2006?
Yeah. So leading up that summer, like, before you went away to uni.
Well, the challenge has been a part of everything we've just said, really, yeah. that we just couldn't talk. But I think also it was... I hadn't had what I'd call a serious relationship at that point. So I suppose there was a part of me that was... Like you said, we weren't looking for that. We hadn't pursued that with each other. So I think I was just taking it as it came, and then it got more and more serious. But then we had another challenge when I started university, because I was having to buy international calling cards.
We both were,
because
yeah.
I didn't, for the first 2 or 3 months of uni, we didn't have internet at all. So the phone situation being what it was, I didn't have data, so I couldn't use a data plan to email or text. So I was having, and they weren't cheap. I was having to buy, was it every day we tried to do it?
No, not every
day. But I feel like they didn't last as long as they said they would. So you'd buy one for, say, £20, and it was supposed to last for...
Well, they were £20, but it depended where you were calling. Like, yeah, if you bought one and called long distance within your same country...
But it was charged per minute, so you bought a card...
But what I'm saying
is, like,
it's
a physical,
like,
card, like a credit card, and then you had to dial a number that connected to your number, and then the amount that got deducted from that card, like a gift card, was how long you stayed on the phone. And
yeah,
I felt
it
like it always expired quicker.
It did, and that was because of how far we were. It was so expensive.
Yeah,
to
you
talk.
Were one of the most expensive destinations.
Yeah,
be.
If it had been, it's just because of how far apart we were.
So poor students don't have much money at the best of times, and I was trying to spend all this money on calling cards on top of that. So we didn't, we suddenly went from talking as much as we could to whenever we could.
And that was really hard and really scary time for me, because...
But you started to feel like I was deliberately not talking to you.
Kind of. Well, but there was also the challenge that you were in a social circle, and of course you wanted to be more involved
yeah,
in that.
Yeah, this was an exciting time for me, and then I couldn't just send you a text or an email to say, hey, this is what's happening.
Because you didn't have the internet.
We didn't have the internet, and we didn't have data plans. So, and at this time, I didn't even have a laptop. iPads didn't exist. Tablet.
What about when you'd go home?
Yeah, so tablet computers and all that, they are no one's
radar. Yeah.
They just didn't exist. So I had a full desktop computer, and it wasn't flat screen like now. It was the big, deep monitors, the tower, speakers, keyboard, mice. And so, yeah, when I went home, I took
like for the weekend,
whole,
even. Like even.
Yeah, even for the weekend, I took that whole thing back with me.
And that's when we could talk, finally.
To talk, yeah. So... And of course, I didn't know, and I think this is what was difficult as well, was I didn't know before I went to uni that there was no internet there. We moved into
yeah.
the buildings and we found out, so I couldn't even tell you.
Yeah, you just moved and you disappeared.
And I disappeared, so I couldn't say to you, oh, by the way, tomorrow I'm not going to have internet for a few days. And then they kept pushing the date back on when it started off being, we don't know when you're going to get it. So when we would talk, I'd get these calling cards and talk to you. And I'd say, oh, well, we may be getting it next week or in a couple of weeks. And then that time would go by and it would always going to be another couple of weeks. So it's, from your point of view, it probably felt like I was stringing you along. I mean, I think this nowadays would be a real catfish situation.
Yeah. They'd be like, girl, don't even think about him. He's leading you on. But no, I think it was scary. I completely trusted you. I don't think I thought that you were lying. It was just frustrating for me. But so the combination of you going somewhere new, where of course, you know, I knew there were going to be girls and I'd be lying if I said I wasn't a little bit jealous, or at least concerned about having the opportunity to be jealous, And, you know, so that combined with suddenly you're not contactable, that was really scary. And I've always had anxiety in my life, but that really peaked it. I had a really hard time with that. So that was September, like late September.
Well, and this is what's hard about that situation for anyone is that nowadays when you can pick up the phone or you can send a message and just say, hey, look, what's going on? Let's talk. You had to wait for the other person to reach out to you. So if you're starting to worry that, are they going to reach out to me?
Yeah, I could get no reassurance from you until you were able to contact me. So that was hard. That was scary. And we were still really hopeful and making plans for one day when we'd be together. And I had been saving. I was working at Outback Steakhouse as a hostess, making like $2 an hour or maybe less, but getting some tip share. So I was hoarding away all my tips and as much money as I could to save it to buy a ticket. We didn't think it would probably be until like the following summer that I'd have enough money, but I've been saving really hard. And I think like not hearing from you and us not being able to talk really spurred me on. And I wanted like...
Because we had spoken about visiting.
Oh, yeah.
And we knew it'd be you coming here because you had the job and I didn't. The situations were...
That you were lazy.
No, the situation was just such that it was more feasible for you to come this way to visit.
And I wanted to come to England. I'd always been fascinated with the country, which is probably part of the reason that I responded to your message back in 2004 the way I did. I liked England and...
Yeah.
And that all kind of tied in. But I saved as hard as I could. And I just happened... I think it was in October... So you hadn't been gone very long, but it was during that period where we couldn't really talk very much, and that was very hard on both of us, but I think in particular me, because at least you had the distraction of being in that new uni life and making new friends and learning and stuff, so I think it was harder on me because nothing had changed. I was still at home waiting to hear from you. And I just happened to be looking online at ticket prices, just because I always did, and I found a fare for Christmas Day to fly to London for like $500, and I had more than enough for that at the time, not tons, but I had probably close to $1,000 that time, and I think I called you.
You did, you told me on the phone.
I said, I found this ticket.
No, I think you, didn't you call me and say, I'm coming to visit, hadn't you bought it?
No, I didn't buy it, I wanted to make sure, because I remember saying to you, like, I found this ticket, should I get it? And you were like, buy it. I was like, well, don't you need to check with your parents, because you were going to be going home from uni over Christmas.
Oh, that's right.
And you said, I don't need to check with them. I'm going to tell them. So buy it. So I bought it. And my parents were like...
And then you went back and said, I'm coming to stay.
Yeah, then I called back and said, I'm coming to stay. My parents thought I was completely insane, but they were also respectful of the fact that I was over 18. And so my...
Yeah, so we were 20 by now.
We had just both... Yeah, we had turned 20 over the summer, both of us, because we're 3 weeks apart. My birthday's in August and his is in September. And you never let me forget that I'm older.
For those 3 weeks, I can rub it in.
Yeah. 30 was especially hard because I was 30 for 3 weeks and you were 29 and you didn't let me forget that. So anyways, my parents were very concerned and your mom didn't really, she was
my
excited.
My parents didn't really give a shit though.
Your dad didn't even really know what was going on. Your mom was excited.
I remember your parents said they had to talk to my parents.
Yeah, my dad.
I think my parents are more relaxed and liberal.
Yeah. My parents are very cool.
But of course it was easier for my parents because I wasn't the one travelling.
And you're a boy.
And I'm a boy, so I'd had someone come in to stay, which my parents never mind.
Yeah, and from my parents' perspective, I was getting on a plane, flying internationally, which I'd never done before. I'd only flown once before from like Phoenix to Burbank, which is like a 45-minute flight.
So it's your first international?
It was my first... Well, no, I'd flown with family international, like for cruises and stuff to get on the ship. But yeah, this was my first big flight on my own. And... Yeah, they were concerned. So my dad talked to your mom. They just wanted a feel for kind of who your family was. I can understand now. Like, at the time, it was embarrassing.
Yeah, my mom liked your dad. I remember your dad. Well, I think he appreciated that she agreed to it. And he knew, oh, she exists. It's a real family. It's all legit.
Yeah, it's a nice family. And actually, our families, even though your parents are divorced and remarried and stuff, but I think... are very relatable and kind of similar mm-hmm. in a lot of ways. I mean, we were raised with the same principles and stuff like that. And,
yeah.
Even though we were so far apart. So anyways, the countdown was on.
Where are we at now?
I booked my ticket.
October.
This is October 2006. I booked my ticket. It was all good to go. And we were so excited. So it was like 2 months until I was going to get here.
Yeah, it wasn't a long countdown.
Actually, well, because I didn't expect to find that ticket fare.
No.
But fine, even still, hint to any long distancers, Christmas Day is a very cheap day to fly. If you've been in LDR for a while, you'll know that. But if you're new to it, fly on Christmas Day if you want to spend the holidays with your partner, because you'll get a better deal then. So the countdown was on. We were ready. We couldn't wait. We were so excited. It was still, I don't even know if you had internet yet at this point in your uni flat or not, but I feel like it was still a struggle to talk.
If I did, I would have just got it, because I mean, I was there for a couple of months at least, and that was about the time when you booked those tickets, so.
Yeah, it was a hard time. It was still a struggle to talk, but we were still really excited, and I think the excitement helped us talk a little bit more initially. But then I remember it was getting to Thanksgiving time, so it was the end of November at this point. Mm. And I had to have my wisdom teeth taken out, which was awful. And I remember saying to you, like, I'm not going to be able to talk at all over the next few days because I'm having oral surgery. But I'll give you a call at the end of the week. And we had set a date to talk. And I was recovering and looking like John Candy. I was really glad. I think I sent you a picture. Do you remember me sending the picture?
I don't remember that picture.
Probably wouldn't have been one of the ones you saved. It's this awkward looking picture. Anyways, so it got to like the end of the week and we were supposed to talk, and it was just really hard to get a hold of you. And I wasn't sure what was going on, but we finally did talk. And that's when you expressed some concerns. Do you want to just talk a little bit about that?
So, yes, we just turned 20. And I think that until the point where you'd bought the tickets, it all felt a bit different. And then when we got when you got the tickets and you were going to be coming here and we were going to be meeting for the first time, and I suppose not talking to you for a couple of weeks gave me time to reflect in hindsight, that it was all going to become much more real, and there's going to be a level of commitment involved that we maybe hadn't really thought of, with things like you had enough money to come over once, but I wasn't working, I was in my first year of uni, you weren't in like a high-paying full-time job, so the question was going to be, how are we going to meet a second time? Because I knew that realistically I wasn't going to be able to pay to come out for a few years.
When it took me...
And it took you a long time to save that money for the first time, so I think I thought that maybe it would be worse for the relationship in the long term if we sort of rushed through at that time doing it, rather than just carrying on with what I'd already done, because once we met and everything changed, and it would realistically we would have decided this is it, we're officially in a long distance relationship.
I think we felt like we were anyway.
We felt like we were anyway.
And but I think we had decided at some point over the summer, like, you know, can I call you my boyfriend? And I think you wanted to, but I think you did even then. You expressed some kind of like...
I had more reservations than you did about... And I think it was just the logistics of it that I kind of got hung up on at that point. Because I was thinking further ahead than maybe we had till that point of, once we meet and once you go home, what next? Mm-hmm. And I couldn't see how we would be able to formulate a plan at that point in our lives, being that age with our job and finance situations. So I told you not to come over, did I?
No, you just said to me, I just remember we finally
That's
talked
right,
about
I said still too, come over, but...
You said it's 2 weeks too long. And I remember just kind of being like, oh my God, what's happening?
That's right.
And so, yeah, we got into this whole conversation where you kind of explained to me what you just, you know, explained now. And I did understand, but I guess I was so gung-ho and willing to do whatever it took that I hadn't even stopped to think really that there might be challenges. I just thought, well, it's what we want. And it was, I had a very romanticized idea of what it was, I think.
I haven't watched as many rom-coms as you.
No, well, very few people have. But you're always kind of sickeningly logical about things, which I love now, but on that day I didn't like it so much. But yeah, I understood where it was from, and you said, like, you know, by all means, come over. But I remember you saying, look, I want to go back to where it was, like, before we decided that we were, like, officially boyfriend and girlfriend. I think you just felt a lot of pressure from it, which is understandable. It's a hard thing. And so you said, you know, think about it. I still want you to come. You're still very important to me. You made that very clear all the way through that really difficult conversation that your feelings hadn't changed. I kept asking, did someone say something? Have you met someone? And it wasn't...
Yeah, that was a hard conversation.
It was heartbreaking. I was devastated.
Yeah.
And you didn't feel very good having to...
No, I didn't want to have the conversation. I didn't feel good. But I think it was one of those conversations that I felt like we needed to have rather than I wanted to have.
Yeah. So I kind of said to you, I don't know if I can come now. Like, I need a few days to think about it. So we didn't talk for a few days. And then I knew that I would just end up getting hurt more if I came because my feelings hadn't changed. And I'd just end up... I was already in love with you as much as I could be given the circumstances, but I knew meeting you in person would just break my heart to know that we couldn't actually be together. So the trip was cancelled. I didn't come, but we kind of...
We tried keeping in touch.
We did. We did okay for the first month or so, but then got to the point where we had accepted that, okay, this isn't going to happen right now, and we were starting to talk to other people, date a little bit, both of us, and I think the jealousy just worked out to be...
Yeah, because we didn't want to not be together, and I think it was... Well, it was only the distance that had done it. So I think at that point in time, it sort of got the better of us.
It was really hard. And I remember, like, you wanted to be really, oh, I don't want to feel like we have to hide things from each other, and which I think was great, but it just didn't really work for us. And we found it really hard. And we ended up having some disagreements, a lot of hurt, disappointment. So probably early in the new year, or right around Christmas time, we stopped talking.
Yeah, we fell out. I think you more than me didn't want to hear from me.
No.
But
because
then,
from my perspective, you crushed my heart, and then we've been fighting. I just couldn't really deal with that. And that's a coping mechanism of mine. I've had, you know, relationships before us, and it always worked best for me, I found, to just cut people out, and that's how I healed.
But then you used that ticket to go to Boston.
Yeah, I had a cousin who lived on the East Coast, and I was able to rebook. I had to pay still loads more. It must have been almost a year later I paid to rebook it. And I got to go to Boston, which is now one of my favorite cities in the world.
And we mean to go back
together. Yeah, we'll go together. Back someday. Yeah.
And then I remember you made a little... Later on, you made a little book for me, some with photos, like little notes in it, and you had a... Pretty sure you had a picture. I don't know if you took it off Boston... Or is a picture you knew of Boston and you said in there that you wanted to take me one day?
Maybe, I don't
know. So we've not done that yet.
Skipping ahead. You're getting out of order.
I am skipping ahead.
You know what I hate about biographies? When people don't go in chronological order.
Yeah, so Andrea can't read biographies where there's any point where there's a flash forward or a flashback. Well, it has to be completely chronological.
One or two,
or the book
okay.
gets thrown across the room and she reads something else.
Doesn't get thrown,
She goes back to Twilight.
Well, you know, if you know what works, that's fine. I just don't like lots of skipping around. It's a bit ridiculous.
So
anyways,
we'll come back to the flight. But what I was going to say was that the cancelling of it, you rebooking the flight to Boston.
Oh, yeah.
But the cancelling of it and the rebooking, it ended up being, it still became part of our journey. And it was something that was turned into something we still want to do together. So you went somewhere you hadn't been. It's become somewhere really important to you and it's somewhere that we now plan to go together.
Oh, yeah. Like, now I know that it was the right thing, but we're still stuck in the time when I thought you were just a guy that was really important to me that had really hurt me, and I didn't really know what to do with that. So this is so late 2006, early 2007. We weren't really talking. We'd had a falling out just based on jealousy and just our immaturity at that time, not really able to cope with what situation we got ourselves in and how big our feelings were. Because I maintain that what we felt for each other at that time, even before we'd met, was beyond anything I'd certainly known. And I know you said you hadn't really had any serious relationships. I'd had one pretty serious relationship and one that was serious-ish. But it was a lot to recover from because those feelings were just profound. I mean, how did you find that period, kind of recovering from all that?
Yeah, it was hard. Like you said before, I did have new distractions in my life that no doubt helped. So I had new people. I was being dragged out in evenings. So I had like a I had a social life that I didn't really even really have a choice in taking part in, so that I had a lot of distractions, whereas if I'd lived at home, it would have been 10 times worse.
Yeah, and that's the situation I was in. And I had a really good friend at the time, who, still a good friend, but at the time we were best friends. And she had kind of seen every stage of us starting to talk again, and, you know, me planning my trip, and so she... There were a lot of bitch fests about you, basically, is what I'm saying. So that's how that's how I coped. Anyway, so, you know, I was doing my own thing. I was still in college. I think I was probably in my second year now, must have been. And it was okay. And I remember later that year, probably spring, so spring 2007, about a year after we had started really talking again, 5-6 months after, you know, everything had kind of fallen through. I started getting the odd email from you, let's just say they were unwelcome emails at the time. And I remember reading it, getting enraged.
But they were unwelcome in the sense that you didn't want to hear from me, not that I was sending you.
The content wasn't unwanted, no. The content was more, you know, look, we're important to each other.
Well, because this is where we got a difference of personalities, is that where your coping mechanism is...
I'm done.
Cutting people out and you're done. And I've always seen it. I always think that's quite sad, that if someone's been an important part of your life and you've got experiences together and at some point or another, for whatever reason, you were important, I think it's sad that that person is removed from your life.
Well, I think you should,
I didn't want that to happen for us.
You should clarify that I don't cut people out forever. It's when I need to heal. I need to be away from that source of pain. And then when I've healed, I can...
Well, to an extent, but then equally, you don't like keeping in touch with your exes and things. And
one of them is a friend on Facebook, you know? Like, we don't really have much to talk about. I mean, it's been a long time. We've grown apart, like, but I have no ill will.
Which happens. If he was
in the same town, I'd be like, hey, let's all meet up and have a drink, meet my husband. Like...
Yeah, time moves it on.
Yeah, but immediate...
I was more... I had the impulse to keep you within arm's reach. Even if we couldn't have it exactly the way we'd originally wanted it.
Just being friends. Because you were seeing someone at this time as well.
Yeah, I was seeing someone at this time.
You just wanted to be friends. That's what you wanted.
Yeah, I thought it would be sad that after everything that was said, everything, however important we were to each other, that we just actually, we're not talking anymore. Because we hadn't stopped talking because we stopped liking each other. It was just circumstances.
Yeah, I don't think that for me that I ever thought that I'm never speaking to him again. I just wasn't in a position. I knew I wasn't in a position then that I wanted you in my life. And like I said, there was a falling out. Some not nice things were said on both our parts. So it had left a very sour taste in my mouth. And I think I focus on that more because it made the hurt a little bit easier. It was a bit easier to be angry. But anyways, these emails started coming through. When I say these emails, it was one or two. The first one I ignored. The second one I ignored again. And then finally... one came through, and I thought it was quite brazen. You just texted me, and this was the time when you didn't have your phone, like, attached to your hip every single hour of the day. Like, it was downstairs.
But tech had moved on that we could text, I guess, by now.
I think we did.
No, it cost me a boatload of money to
text. We still text, but we only did it, like, as a prompt that we needed to get in touch a bit
better. Yeah, because it was expensive to text.
Well, and I hadn't been coming back to your emails, so...
That's right.
Yeah, but this is all over.
I spent a lot of money on the phones contacting you at uni because it was very expensive.
I did a lot too, though.
Yeah, you did.
I paid for the majority of them because I was working.
You also booked a flight ticket.
Yeah, that I had to rebook to go see someone else.
I text you.
Yeah, and I remember getting downstairs in the morning, seeing my phone. It was this text that said, if I was in America, would you want to see me? And I just thought, like, who the hell does this guy think he is?
I wasn't in America.
No, like, I don't even know. Like, I don't think we ever got to the bottom of why you sent that text. But anyways, that, I just kind of felt like the nerve.
Well, because I didn't want to be, I didn't want you to be, like, I wanted you to still want to see me, you know, to be friendly enough.
Yeah.
For the situation to be amicable enough that if one of us was nearby, we would want
to
meet.
If you happened to be in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
5,000 miles away from yours. But I don't know, at the time I just thought it was a tactic because I wasn't coming back, like, but I guess whatever it was, it had the intended, you know, effect that I finally was like, I think I went back to the email that I hadn't gone, the most recent one after that text, and replied. And I was like, look, and I just said, I don't know what you expect from me, basically.
Yeah.
And then it all opened up. You explained a lot about why some of your jealous, you know, reactions and some of the things you had said when we fell out. We just talked through a lot of that. And you were still with seeing that person that you were with for quite a while. And I asked, well, I mean, you're like, look, I just want to be friends. Like, that's all I want. We're important to each other. We've had some wonderful times and conversations. And I don't want that to be something that's just wasted, essentially. So we kind of found some weird ground. It was hard.
And it was slightly more uncomfortable ground.
Well, but we weren't talking anywhere near.
I think it was kind of cagey.
Well, yeah, because we were both still hurt, especially me. But we weren't talking anywhere near what we were. When I say we were back in touch, it was a couple conversations every few weeks, the odd email.
It
was
just very sporadic.
It was really sporadic. And I think, you know, I had a lot going in my life. You know, I was at uni level now because the American college system is different. So I was doing junior college and then I was at uni level. And, you know, my sister had a baby, so I had a new niece and I had lots of friends. I think I had a different job at the time, different part-time job at the university. I wasn't working at the restaurant anymore. And I think we found some weird ground, some wobbly ground where we could at least be civil to each other and admit that, you know, that we were still important to each other, but it was no relationship of any sort, really.
Oh, no.
But it always angered me so much because your relationship, I don't want you to mind me saying, was off and on. And these were the new days of Facebook. So when I'd see that you were out of a relationship, my heart would skip a beat. And then I'd see you were back in a relationship. And I just hated the whole thing, really. Just I knew that I was still too invested in you as a person. That's part of the reason I think the contact was so sporadic at the time. Really. So yeah, we're doing our own thing. You got towards the end of university. I had finished and I had just started teaching. So now
I left uni early 2009.
Yeah, so this is up to 2009 now. So there'd been about a year and a half of, you know, weirdness at first and then just kind of, you know, we don't talk too much, but we're civil. So yeah, it was 2009. Your relationship was completely over. I had no one, which was so annoying to me after you. Like, I dated people. I went out once with someone here and there, but I never got to like a second date, really.
Well, I think that's something that people will relate to in long-distance relationships, that you try to meet people, and you've always said it just didn't feel...
Yeah, I have vivid memories of sitting across the table at, you know, an Olive Garden or whatever from a perfectly nice guy that either I'd met through a friend or, like, Plenty of Fish or whatever those dating things were, and they were fine. Like, it was just fine, and I couldn't figure out, or maybe it just annoyed me, that I felt so much more for this guy on the other side of the world that I'd never touched, never seen, never smelled, than these, like, physical men right in front of me that I could actually have something with. And that really, really frustrated me. Especially because I knew that you were in a relationship. I didn't know if it was happy. I didn't know what.
Well, I think part of that is we knew each other so well.
Yeah.
Like, I could see through webcam when something was bothering you. So we'd really put a lot of effort in. We knew each other to the point that these new people, you didn't have the same knowledge of each other.
Or they just weren't great matches because they were like, I don't know, online dating, you can get really lucky. But I think in my instance, I was trying to force something because I wanted a relationship so bad. I remember being awkward at that time, like, well, between when we cancelled my trip up to, like, you know, this point in 2009. Well, because
we were very organic. Like, we'd already said we hadn't specifically looked for each other.
But I remember being that annoying friend. Like, I'd make new friends. Like, do you have any, like, single guy friends? Is your boyfriend? And I just was so, not desperate, but just maybe a little bit desperate. Not desperate for a man, but just desperate for connection. And I've been single a long time because even before you, which wasn't a physical relationship, I've been single for a couple of years. So I hadn't had like a normal guy in your own town, someone to go out with. You know, I had guy friends and I had little things pop up, a guy that I'd like and make out with, but it was just nothing. So it was 2009. I was in my first year of teaching middle school. So I kind of finally stopped thinking about relationships as I was trying to survive as a middle school teacher, not at all prepared for it. And a few months in, it was late October, mid to late October, I came home from work one day, and there was a letter sitting on the kitchen counter. And even before I realized that it was addressed to me, just from across the kitchen, I recognized the writing on the envelope, and it was from him.
Yes, I don't know the exact month, I think it was sort of July, August time, and I'd gone with some of my family to France.
And Spain?
Well, we did a couple of day trips into Spain, but the holiday was in France. And we were there for 2 or 3 weeks. And so we had been talking that year, nothing had really progressed. We were just civil and talking now and then, and we'd caught up a little bit with each other.
But I think we got to a place where it was a lot less awkward.
It was a lot less awkward.
And you had broken up with your girlfriend for good, which I think made a big difference.
Yeah, so we were both totally single. We were less awkward. But I remember thinking about you when I was over there, and because Europe looks very different, it's the narrow winding streets and the cobblestones. I knew that you would like all that from a history point of view, from a photography point of view. And I just remember thinking about you a lot on that trip. And then there was one day we went to some caves, in the side of a mountain of some sort. And they had, you could get postcards of a vending machine with some pictures of the caves. And at first I thought, I'll get some of these pictures for you. They're really cool. They're like the caves. I don't know what it's called.
And stalagmites?
Yeah, that stuff. Looks like yellow icicles. And
yellow icicles. That sounds really appetizing. Don't eat yellow snow, people.
Don't eat icicles. But so I got you, I think I got you a handful of these postcards.
I think you had 2 or 3.
And then I also got, so I was thinking about you a lot on this trip. And we did things like the markets and that, and I bought a couple of bracelets.
Yeah, like leather strap bracelets.
And these were ship bracelets, because they were those, they were held together by a magnet, weren't they?
No, so those were the ones that you'd given me years ago, before, when I was meant to come over the first time, you'd given me one of those magnetic ones.
Yeah.
This one you got to, replace that one.
That's right. So this was better. So then I was just meaning, like I said, this was maybe August, and I kept meaning to write you a letter and do it. It just took me ages to do it. So it got to October and I finally got it together and I wrote you a letter explaining. It's quite a long letter, wasn't it? I don't remember everything I said in there, but I said I've been on a holiday, I was thinking about you, what was included with the postcards, the bracelets. And I think I said I hoped that we could move on.
Well, you said.
And I was just trying to put things right, I think. And then I couldn't really do anything but wait for you to receive it.
But we had already we had already been talking a little bit, again, sporadic, a bit more than normal, but it was still quite sporadic. But I remember at the end of the letter, you said, things along the lines of I'm just really glad that after all that's happened, I'm still able to write you this letter. Even though things weren't the way maybe that they'd been a long time ago, or maybe the friendship that we'd hoped we could have. You were just really happy that I was still in your life. And, opening that letter, I think it just made me realize really how much I really still wanted something with you after a couple of years or however long it had been.
So I feel like that was a pivotal moment for us that really changed the dynamics of our relationship. Because I think you thought it was okay to open up again.
Yeah, I did.
So you were kind of willing to be vulnerable.
I think the problem is that for all those years, I knew I couldn't just be your friend because I wanted so much more. And, a big part of that was that you were in a more steady relationship than I had been at the time. And once that was completely over, which it was at this time, you'd written this letter, I felt like maybe there was a chance that we could be more than friends at that point. And I knew, I didn't know if I could be friends with you, but I knew that I could be more with you because that's what I'd always wanted.
Mm-hmm.
So I wrote a letter back to you, basically, saying how happy I was, how much I loved the bracelet and the pictures, and how much I wanted to see Europe with you, and how really I just wanted to know if you still had anything left of what you felt for me before everything fell apart.
Which I did. And I feel like from here, everything moved really quick from here. So this was October, November. Well, it would have been November by the time...
October. It was late October that I got the letter.
And then, so November by the time I heard back from you.
But we had been emailing as well in the same time.
Yeah, so the technology had moved on.
And that was a huge thing.
And that really was huge, because then you went out not long after, bought an iPhone, so you could have emails on your phone.
I already had an iPhone at this point, so we could email on my phone. Things like iMessage and WhatsApp weren't a thing yet.
No, but we were able to
Skype.
We could email all day, so we've still got those emails, like these huge threads of emails.
Yeah.
But we could have Skype on our phones and at least audio talk. So we were able to be much more consistent. I could contact you. It wasn't very good. We had data plans by now.
So the Wi-Fi was a thing, so I mean that.
I was able to talk to you while I was out, not as well as you can today, but I could have a crackly phone call and
at least an email say I can't talk, I'm out. You know, like at least so
yeah.
We could just be a lot more. I could know what was going on in your life. You could know what was going on in mine. And I think that, you know, the advances in the technology combined with us just being in a bit better place in life. You know, we'd both grown up. You certainly grown up a lot in uni.
Because uni was a lot of firsts to me, so I'd had the relationship. Was one thing where I obviously...
The relationship with another person, you mean?
Yeah, but that allowed me to learn a lot about being in a relationship.
Yeah.
We lived together because it was a university relationship. Then I'd moved out of home, so I'd had to mature and sort of learn how to do things myself. So just overall, I'd gone from being 19, 20,
yeah,
living at home, to being 23 with a lot more experience under my belt, so... That helped, and you were now teaching, so you were a grown up around children. And
I was still living at home though.
And we'd also had a lot of our own baggage to overcome.
Yeah. So it was like a forest fire.
Yeah, so when did you book your ticket now?
Because I was scared. As much as I was excited and hopeful.
But I feel like it all happened really quick because we started talking in October and then you came over the following June.
Yeah, I booked my tickets on Valentine's Day. So there was a few months. So it was like 3-4 months before I booked my tickets, but I was really scared.
Yeah, we had a few conversations about how could you know that I wouldn't cancel again.
Oh, we had a lot of conversations.
And that was right until you got on the plane.
Yeah.
You were saying, like, are you going to be there? Because this is the other thing, now you can get on a plane and you can pay a lot of money to get Wi-Fi and say, are you at Heathrow? You couldn't do that then.
No,
we couldn't get on the plane. There was no way of communicating with each other on the plane.
Yeah, so...
So now you can get on the plane and say, if you left, yeah, you can go to the airport. You couldn't then. So yeah. Until you boarded, that worry that I'd be there.
We're still... You're doing the chronological thing again.
Sorry, I think most people can follow it.
Oh, I don't know. They don't know our story.
What?
I know our story and you're confusing me. So there's a lot of conversations about... that, and I remember having talks with my mom as well, because I mean my family was really concerned. They love you now, they are so accepting of you and they love you so much, but at the time they thought I was an idiot. I remember specifically at the time that it all fell apart a few years before, and you know, after that really horrible phone call, it just was really hard talking to my mom and crying and her saying, look, you don't know what life's going to bring. You know, this may not be it for you. This may not be the end. And I just remember saying, don't patronize me, Mom. And then here you come back into my life a few years later and we're going down the same direction. And I was scared to tell them, you know, that I was talking to you again. And I did. And my mom said, because I think I had told her over the years, you know, when I'd hear from you and she'd be like, okay, just be careful. You know, like, remember what happened, be smart. And I think she could tell it was different this time. And I think, you know, I made it clear that you were single. And obviously she knew that I was earning money now and that she couldn't really stop me doing anything. And I just remember her saying, that's okay, you know, be friends, but don't let yourself get in too deep. And I just said, it's too late. Yeah, and we just completely fell back to where we were before and even better, even deeper.
Yeah, it was very quick. Effortless.
Feelings? How did you feel?
I think we really, really were trying to make up for a lot of lost time. Because I think I always knew how I felt about you.
Which was?
What do you mean, which one?
Good. I felt good about
you. Yeah, I felt good about you. But I think that we had that whole strange period where it was just weird. And then we got to the point now where we were able to open up with each other more.
Yeah.
So it just happened really quick from then on. So you came over, you booked your tickets in February.
Yeah, I think it was kind of like my Valentine's Day present. I don't think it really planned it that way, but it happened to be that day. And
they were probably cheaper.
I was terrified, but I was feeling a bit brave that day. I remember a friend was kind of like, just do it. See what happens, you know? And I booked him. And I just remember it being a really heady time, all of it. It was just so, like, it was like being drunk.
Yeah,
and
it's quite a blur.
It wasn't a blur for me at all. I remember.
No, looking back, it was a blur. It just all feels really. Like, I remember it, but it was very quick.
It didn't feel quick, especially after we had a countdown from my ticket buying day.
That's right.
But I don't know. I mean, do you not remember just like. Maybe I was worse because I'm a girl, but compulsively checking my phone and being at dinner and my family being like, put your phone down. Like, stop checking your emails.
I mean, the time being quick. The time is never quick when you're in a long distance relationship. I mean, looking back, the events that happened in a short space of time.
Oh, like it all progressed quickly.
That was all a bit of a blur.
Yeah.
But yeah, certainly, like, from talking to then booking the tickets to waiting for you to get here, that all really dragged on. And yeah, you're always checking your phone. Have I missed a notification? Do you want to leave your phone? That all felt really slow.
Yeah. And I just remember we'd talk every night after I got home from work, and I was a teacher, so luckily I didn't, you know, my day finished early. I was home by like 4:30, 5, and you'd stay up for a few hours, and I was actually almost on your time zone again because my school started really early at 6:45. I had to be there. So I was already getting up at like 4 something. So that was afternoon for you. I know that was like noon. 4 was like noon for you.
Yeah.
And because you were staying up so late talking to me.
Well, I was also working from home at this
point. Yeah, you were starting your freelance business.
So I was self-employed working from home, so I wasn't at work. I was able to be quite available.
Yeah, that was really good.
To respond to emails and text messages.
Yeah. And so we'd FaceTime, not FaceTime, because that wasn't around yet. We would,
We're still webcam or Skype. It was
Skype. Yeah, Skype, either on the phone or over webcam. And it was just amazing and exciting. And I think the closer it got to June, it was more like, oh my God, what if it's not like this in person?
That's what we started worrying about.
Yeah.
What if,
the closer it got.
I think we started trying to get a contingency plan of if we met and it wasn't what we had hoped it was going to be, how would we deal with it?
Well, my parents' neighbors, the woman is English in America, and she actually had family, a brother living in
like
a town.
Like an hour down the road, was it?
It was Maidstone.
Yeah, but we were living in Sussex.
Yeah, so an hour and a half, 2 hours down the road. So she gave me their number just in case. So, you know, we were really hopeful, and we didn't think that there'd be any issues, but there's no way to deny, like, this has been amazing, and there's been years of build up to this. What if it's a letdown?
Yeah, it could have been anticlimactic.
Or what if we're not as attracted in person as, you know, we think we're gonna be or whatever. We were able to send so many pictures. We both had camera phones, and we were sending each other pictures almost every day. And, you know, we knew each other's mannerisms because we had Skype and stuff, you know, video chat. So we had a good idea, but I think anyone who's been in a situation where you've been in a long-distance relationship before you've actually met is something you think about. Is it going
to
be?
Yeah, it has to be.
Something that you think about, you mean?
Yeah, I don't see how you couldn't.
Yeah, it's something legit to worry about. So my flight, well, I got here 23rd of June, 2010. That's when I landed. And I remember I made a friend on my flight, and I had a layover for some reason in Calgary in Canada because I flew Air Canada. And I remember trying to message you then to let you know, like, you know, I'd landed safe and I was taking off. I don't remember if I had internet or if you got it or whatever. But yeah, so there I am landing at Heathrow.
Yeah, what was really awkward about it was I didn't drive.
Oh, yes.
So I had to get a lift from my mum and stepdad, who were very respectful of it. They didn't come and meet you with me. They went and had a coffee or whatever they did. But we weren't able to be
independent.
Yeah. So it was kind of, we met on our own at the gate, and we were very sort of sheepish.
Not really. Well, I just, the first I remember.
Minute, I think we had a quick cuddle.
Well, Well, no, but I just remember the customs thing.
Oh, right.
It was so, like, I was on edge enough. Here I am. I've been in the air for 12 hours. I've had an extra labor. So really, I've been traveling for 16 to 18 hours, if you add it all together. And when you haven't met someone and you've been waiting to meet them for years, you want to look fucking amazing when you step off that plane. So, you know, I did the best I could with dry shampoo and a brush and tried to reapply my makeup and brush my teeth in the plane bathroom. And oh, I was a mess. And so I'm going through customs and I'm going through passport check, and it's this English lady, and I'm always wary now, after many years of going through customs. Women in customs can be a bit jobs-worthy because they feel like they have a point to prove. Anyways, she asked my passport, are you here for business or pleasure? I'm here for pleasure. Where are you staying? With my boyfriend's family. Where does he live? I told him where he lived. How long have you been together? And I kind of went, well, she's like, how did you meet? And I was like, online. She's like, is this your first time meeting? And I was like, yeah. And she's like, how long have you been talking? 6 years. Oh, have a great time, stamp. And just led me on my way. I was like, are they going to detain me? But once she really, you know, I don't know. That just, so I was nervous. And I'd never come through like a big, I mean, Heathrow was the biggest airport. I mean, I guess I flew from LA, but it was certainly the biggest arrivals gate I'd ever been at. I had no idea where you'd be. And it was just, I was exhausted. It was a haze. And then there you were. And I didn't, yeah, we had a hug and...
Weren't you still with that girl you were traveling with?
Yeah, that girl that I met on the plane. But then she took off as soon as we said hello. I introduced you and she had to like go get her, she had to go get the train. But yeah, we kind of talked for a few minutes. Just, I don't even remember. This whole part is a blur. Like,
that was a blur. We were definitely ship-shit the gate, and then we went outside, and then we...
You had a cigarette. You were smoking at the time.
Well, we started to warm up a bit.
Yeah, and then we went and found your mom and your stepdad. They were waiting for us at the coffee shop in the...
And then they drove us home, so we were sitting in the back of the car.
Oh, God, I remember being in the backseat of the car, and it was like when in school your teacher makes you sit next to the boy you have a crush on. You want to be there more than anything, but you're also like, oh, my God.
It was really weird, because then finally we're in person.
Yeah, and but your parents are there.
But my parents are there, and then it's like, how are you feeling? Are you
we want to talk about this, but we can't because they're there. And it's like, what, a little over an hour trip from Heathrow to your parents where they live at the time. And I remember just being in the back seat and like I was wearing what, you know, like my grandma's ring or something, and you were like touching the ring on my finger, and I was like, oh my God. And I remember your mom had made it very clear to me that she had the spare room fixed up
for me. So my parents were relaxed enough that they didn't mind us sharing a room. It was expected that you'd come over and we'd share a bed.
We're of a certain age. We're 23 years old, yeah.
But, yeah, you were allowed to have the spare room if
things weren't working. Yeah, I think your mom, you know, even if I just needed some space or some time or I was nervous or whatever. And I remember sitting in the back seat and you said to me really quietly, where do you want to sleep tonight? And I was like, in your room. And, you know, I think that was really the icebreaker. Okay, I like you, you like me.
Yeah, and then so we, that, it wasn't that awkward, but then we got to the house, put your stuff in my room, and we were sitting, and we didn't know
I went and took a shower first thing, because, like, I just...
But there's that awkwardness, because we hadn't had a kiss yet.
I had to kiss you.
You kissed me in the bedroom, yeah. I think I slapped your butt, you were lying on my bed.
Yeah, I was lying on your bed, you were, like, going over your computer, and you walked by and slapped my butt, so I was like, okay, that's a good thing, and then... We were just like kind of, then we were hugging. We were standing up and hugging at one point, and
you kissed me, yeah.
I was just dying for you to kiss me, and you just wouldn't because you were a big sissy lala. And I just kissed you, and then that was really when everything fell into place. And that summer is just like.
It's not the highlight of our.
Oh, God, it was the best. I mean, we've been waiting for it for years, and I was supposed to. So I had the summer off. Sorry, we kind of missed. I was a teacher, obviously, so I had the summer off. And so I had. You know, arrange my flights so that I'd be here for 2 weeks. And, you know, kind of the opposite of what happened last time where you were like, oh, do you think 2 weeks is too long? Like the minute I got there, you were like, I want you to stay longer. So we tried to figure it out because I could stay for like more than a month, really, with my time off from school.
Yeah, and where I was working for myself,
really flexible, yeah. So the minute I got there, we basically tried to find out a way for me to stay longer, and we changed my flights. I didn't get any money back. I had to just forego my ticket back and book a one-way ticket home.
Yeah, so you end up staying for a month. And but we did loads in that
We did time. Tons. God, you showed me London. We went to Hampton Court. We went to Bruges. We went to Arendelle.
We did a lot of travelling.
We did. We watched
a lot of movies. Like, we spent a lot of time just...
together.
Getting to know each other in person. I think it was everything we'd hoped for.
I think it was more, I mean, for me. And it was just so right. And just like, you know, when we snuggled and we just fit perfectly together. And, you know, I think we were both worried about the sexual stuff. And that was all very good.
That was very good.
Very good.
I remember you'd said that you didn't want to do it on the first day. We had to wait until day two. So like first thing in the morning, we got that out of the way.
Yeah, but the night before, that first night, we did everything but...
Yeah.
So I felt like, that's okay, I've been a good girl.
Yeah.
But I was I was dying for you as much as you were dying for me.
We made the most of that opportunity.
Yes, we did.
But it
was my first time. I mean, I'd been to the Caribbean before and Mexico, but it was my first time in Europe. And apart from just the drunkenness of being with you and being in love with you and knowing that we actually were in love, because I remember, like, before we actually met face-to-face, you were very nervous about saying... You didn't mind saying I love you, but you were scared to say I'm in love with you. Like, you just... And I think I felt very funny about that when I didn't like that. But then once we actually met, I understood. Like, yeah, this is more. Yeah,
it was fine. But then, so the month was over and you had to go home.
God, that was awful. It was terrible.
So this was July.
Towards the end of July, because school was going to start, like, the first or second week of August. So I needed to get back and start getting set up and... It was just awful. Like, you just said, just stay. But, you know, we obviously, it wasn't that easy. There would have been visa things to work out, and I had to earn money somehow, and you weren't in a position to support me. Your business was very new and wasn't turning over very much, and I had to go back. And I just remember being terrified because I knew how to do the long distance when we hadn't met, but what was it going to be like now that we had met? It was even harder.
Yeah, it was a very different dynamic.
And I just remember crying and saying goodbye to you and then going through security. I couldn't even see where I was going because of the tears and mascara, just running. And I kind of got my shit together, got to my gate. And I remember trying to call you, but my, you know, phones and data weren't great internationally, you know, back in 2010. So I actually couldn't, I wanted to call you. And I actually, even still, part of me thinks that if my phone had worked, I would have called you and said, come get me. I can't do this. Like, come back. But I remember being on that flight, shutting myself in the bathroom and the tiny toilet in the plane and just bawling, wiping my face, going back to my seat. And then, yeah, I went back to kind of my life. What was that like leaving me for you?
Yeah, that was really hard because for me, you'd been there for a month and then I was going home. So the house felt empty. Yeah. It was an awkward drive home with my parents again because...
They knew you'd be sad.
Yeah, so that was kind of awkward.
And you know,
and then I couldn't talk to you for like half a day or a day.
Yeah, I think I flew direct this time. I think I flew, I flew direct back to LA. Who picked me up?
I have no idea.
I can't even remember if it was my...
Well,
my best friend. Oh no, it's just funny now that I can't remember. Anyways, I go back to my sister's house. She lives not too far from LA, and I'd left my car with her for the summer, and I was really tired, and I knew I'd be really jet-lagged, so I broke up the journey back to Arizona by stopping at my brother's in San Diego for a night or two. And also, I had bought everyone I knew tons of souvenirs, so I was dropping off all my presents. And then I got home to Arizona, and the next couple days, I just would start crying at just like the drop of a hat. Just devastated. I was working on a scrapbook. I'd taken loads of pictures and kept all the, like, maps and pamphlets and pictures of places we'd gone. And that was kind of how I coped. But it was really hard. It was really difficult. And at that point, we didn't know we were going to see each other again.
That was a hard time.
And I think by September, actually, on your birthday, I have a thing for booking tickets on special days. I booked my tickets to come back at Christmas. So I needed to know.
So we were only really apart at that point for...
From end of July to middle of December. But
yeah,
it was hard.
But that dragged. That really dragged.
It dragged.
I remember I had to be... The relationship kind of changed at that point because where you were having such a hard time, I was having to be really supportive to you.
I had a really bad time of it.
So all the... What had before been build up and excitement and planning for stuff, now it was... That was over.
It was hurt now, being apart.
Yeah.
And I went through Some really hard stuff. You know, I think I mentioned earlier that I've experienced anxiety, but I've experienced pretty extreme anxiety, and this was one of the worst points. It just kind of got worse and worse, and, you know, I was having panic attacks that would go on for days, and I was having to go back on anxiety medication. And there were points during it when I just didn't think I could do it. My family was extremely worried about me. You were worried, but it was really hard for you because you were seeing this happen from 5,000 miles away. You couldn't do anything. But I was not okay, and I was losing weight drastically. And at one point, I said to you, we need to end this. I can't do this. We need to break up. It's killing me. And you were just, what did you say?
I don't know, but I think I said to you that that's not going to make it any easier because
we're still apart. Yeah.
You're not getting what you want by being apart.
Yeah.
Also, by being broken up, you'd still be apart. So
I didn't.
I think we knew that we just had to keep going.
Yeah. And I don't remember how it got better. I know that there was a few things that I needed you to do.
Yeah, but I think
you did.
I think really you just slogged it out. The upshot is you came back for that Christmas.
Yeah, so I booked my tickets in September, and then you had got a really good freelance project that saw a lot of money coming in for you. And you said, I'm going to come back after Christmas and come stay with you and your family for 6 weeks. And somehow, and this flight was not direct. I think I had to stop in Chicago or Charlotte or something, but...
Yeah, Charlotte we stopped in.
But somehow, both legs... of my return flight that after Christmas coming back from London to Phoenix, there was an empty seat.
So these flights were full, or yeah. They were really busy, and yeah, there just happened to be seats next to you. So it's kind of meant to be.
Yeah. So and that was so exciting because we knew then that we were going to be together. So I was coming.
Been together for Christmas. We had New Year's in England.
Well, yeah. So I had 3 weeks off for school break. So I think I came to England for 2.5 weeks. Like I left, you know, like school it out on the Friday. I was on a plane Saturday morning. Oh, and there was all that snow that was uncharacteristic, and we didn't know if my flight was going to make it. Gatwick was closed for a while. We didn't know what's happening. So I was really delayed in Charlotte for like 7 hours, but I got there. You didn't know when to pick me up. It was all a bit hairy. But we got there, and immediately I just felt better seeing you, and we were fine, and we picked up where we left off, and it was perfect, and we had a great Christmas. Your family was so sweet, and your mom gave me so many presents, and... You know, it had been snowing. It wasn't snowing anymore, but there was still snow on the ground, which obviously growing up in Southern California and Arizona wasn't something that I got to see much of. And we just, it was great. It was such a great Christmas.
Yeah, so then we knew we didn't want to be apart again, so I came back with you.
So you were going
to
say...
That was supposed to be 6 weeks.
Till mid-February, you were meant to come back.
And then I was thinking, well...
I told you I
can't. There was a little while, we were there for a little while before we started talking about it, but then I said
I can't do it again.
You said you can't do it again. I thought, well... I could work there.
Remotely.
And I was allowed to stay for 3 months.
At a time.
So I stayed.
Well, so you stayed until my spring break, which would have, for school, which was like
it was March
or April.
And then we came back to England for a week, so my...
A week and a half,
That renewed how long I could stay there.
Yeah.
So then, the option was I ended up staying for 6 months.
Till the end of my school year, yeah. So we went back... We came here for spring break to England, went back to America, and...
So other than for a week to reset the visa period, I was there from January through to June.
Yeah, but... So after we got back, you know, we knew we didn't want to be apart, and really, all that this had done was, okay, well, now we're together to the end of the school year, at which point I can come back and stay with you, but what's going to happen? And, you know, we'd already started talking about marriage. We knew we wanted to marry each other, but I think you just weren't sure if we were old enough or if you were old enough or, you know...
Yeah.
You weren't sure if you were ready for that kind of thing. And we had some kind of, not fights, but kind of like, just serious conversations about that. And I think realistically we knew that that was going to be the easiest way for us to be together was just through a marriage visa. And the plan had always been for me to go to England. Like, I wanted to.
You wanted to, and it's also a lot easier to be in America.
It was.
At the time, I think the rules have changed now. But it was an easy, we got the visa within a week.
Well, hold on. You're giving away... You're doing spoilers. Yeah, it was a lot easier process. I guess we didn't really know that even at the time, but that's just what we wanted. So, in April, I ruined a very special part in my life.
Yeah, so we knew at this point that the plan was we'd move back here. And we knew that, or I knew, that we needed to be engaged for that to happen, which is fair enough.
Both knew, yeah.
So I remember I got your dad's permission to marry you. I think he was just pleased to see the back of you. And then this was hard because in America, I was driving now. You taught me to drive out there, but I couldn't drive on my own.
So, you didn't have my car, yeah.
I didn't have your car and I wasn't legally able to drive unattended. Yeah. So I couldn't go out and buy a ring and all that good stuff. So, the pressure I had was you had to tell the school whether you were in your contract or not. And you only had a couple of days left to do it.
Had a few weeks, I think. Yeah,
or you needed to know within a couple of days what you were doing.
Yeah.
So I had to propose quite quickly, which was fine. I knew I was going to do it, but my time frame was short. And I remember we went out one night. Did we go for dinner? I don't know. We hadn't gone for dinner. You'd come home from work. It was just a normal day.
And I was all like, just, you know, work's told me that I need to let them know. And I was pretty frantic, like, suddenly we felt the pressure that we had to figure out what we were going to do.
Yeah, so I think I said, let's just go for a drive, because you live near the foothills of the mountains. So I thought, let's go to the mountains, that seems like a nice place to propose. I didn't have a ring. But let's go there, and then you didn't want to go there.
It was getting dark, and I was...
You just don't like doing things you don't want to do, so you're like, no, I'm not going there. And I didn't really know the area as well as you did, so now I'm thinking, well, fuck, where are we going to go? And one of us, I think you suggested, let's go to the church that you used to go to.
Yeah, you just were kind of playing it like, oh, I just feel like, you know, we've had this very serious conversation this afternoon. Like,
I don't want to go back to the house.
Let's just get out for a bit.
So we end up at this church, we get out of the car. Oh, that's fine, I'll do it in the church. And it's got meaning for you. So we get out, we go to the door, the church is locked. So then I thought, well, I'll just have to do it here at the door to the church. And I turn around and you're back in the car. You did not want to be out of the house. So in the end, I just had to propose it in the car. I had nowhere else to go. Although not having a ring turned out to be quite fortuitous, because what I had in my mind is what you would love. You couldn't stand the sight of it. So... We got engaged that night. We went back to the house. You told your mum. She didn't believe you. Your dad knew because I had his permission. But your mum kind of put a damper on it because you had to convince her that we were engaged.
Yeah, like, I'm not just making this up.
But then that weekend, we went out and went ring shopping, which was really nice. That was
so fun. Oh, it was one of my favourite, like...
And we got kind of lower end of the budget rings because neither of us had much money.
Mm.
But they've lasted.
It was exactly what I wanted, though. It didn't...
Yeah. But it was a fun day, and I just imagined that I would have a ring to give you.
And that I
wouldn't. But I'm pleased I didn't, because one, you wouldn't have liked it, and two, we had a really special day going out and buying the ring together. But yeah, you did fuck up the proposal.
I did. I'm always messing
up. But that's another story for us.
Yeah, so after that, it was time to figure out the visa situation, which was actually, I mean...
It wasn't that bad.
It wasn't. It was stressful for me.
There was quite a lot of paperwork.
There was a lot of paperwork, there were a lot of steps, there was a lot of, like, they wanted phone records, but because we've been talking on Skype so much, there weren't phone records, but I found what I could, and they wanted emails, and finding an email that didn't have anything sexual or inappropriate in it was quite the job. We had loads of pictures of ourselves, so, but yeah, they want proof, basically, so I paid an expediting fee to make sure that we got an answer quite quick, and so this is end of April, and... Gosh, it must have been by...
I think we did it on a Thursday and you had it by the Wednesday.
The next week, yeah. Because I remember, well, we didn't... It was a couple of weeks before I got everything together and got everything, you know, figure out what we had to do. I had to have, like, my biometric fingerprints and photos taken and all kinds of stuff. So it was
There was no medical involved.
No.
You didn't need an interview. They didn't need to prove you could speak English because you came from America. So there was a... It was quite easy for us.
Yeah, because of the relationship between the two countries and the same languages, like, it was a lot easier. So, but there was a couple of weeks after we got engaged that we were getting all the paperwork together. And then we sent it off, and yeah, there was a period of a week or so where we didn't really know what was going to be happening.
You had to call them a few times with questions, and that was a really expensive line to call them.
Was that not here after?
No, that was when you were doing the paperwork for the visa, like, what do I need to include? What does this bit mean? It was a really expensive phone line.
Yeah, but I didn't pay it.
It went on the credit card. So it was stressful.
But I think I was just so scared that they were going to say no to us or that we'd fill it out wrong. And I think they've actually got a lot more strict in the years since then that if you fill out something wrong or tick the wrong box, you're just rejected and you have to start over again. But I think they were a lot more lenient.
And the requirements are a lot stricter now.
Yeah. And I mean, there wasn't a specific amount of savings I had to have. It was just a lot easier, I think. And yeah, within a week or a little bit less, I came home.
But the only stipulation of it was when you got that visa within a week, they said you have to get married within 6 months.
Yeah.
So this was April.
This is probably May by the time we got
May. Yes. So we had until October to get married-ish, around about October.
Yeah, so I remember coming home from work one day, and it had been a rough day, and I was nervous about what was going to happen with the visa situation, and I just had the most brief, blasé email waiting for me when I got home that just said, your UK visa has been issued, expect it in the post within however long.
That's right, yeah.
And we were so excited. My mom was devastated. I mean, she was happy that we were going to be together, but she was sad that I was going to be leaving. So,
you were the last child at home.
Yeah, so the rest of May was cleaning out my room, getting rid of my stuff, seeing people.
And packing.
Because school ended for me at the very end of May, or very first week of June. And then we only had a few days in Arizona, and then we did one big road trip of the things that you'd wanted to see. Because you'd had a great time with me out in
That's
America.
That's right,
but
we did from... We did you, because we were going to be flying back from LA. It was my first direct flight, I think.
Probably.
So we went from Arizona, we did Vegas and the Grand Canyon, and then we looped back and we went up to LA.
Mm-hmm.
So we had, that was a really good trip.
Yeah, but a lot of
kind
fun.
Kind of all the tourist sites that I would have wanted to see.
Yeah, because you've got to see a lot. You know, and you really enjoyed your 6 months
in America.
But we
hadn't done the Grand Canyon, we hadn't done...
Well, we could only do little trips because
I was
working.
We'd basically done California and we'd done where you lived in Arizona. So that trip was the opportunity to be a tourist for a little while. But then we moved. And then it was wedding planning. Because by June, we only had 4 months.
Yeah, roughly.
To get married. So we did it in 3. We got married at the start of September.
Small wedding. Because we had talked about doing, like, just going and... like the courthouse kind of wedding, and then doing a bigger wedding later in the year, because obviously...
So the courthouse wedding to meet the legal requirement for the visa, and then having a big fancy wedding.
Not fancy, but just a big... Well, just because it was very short notice for all of my family, no one could get there.
Yeah.
But in the end, we kind of decided, well, then which day is going to feel like our wedding day? I don't, you know, we'll just do one nice small wedding, but only my parents could come from my side, but it was... small but beautiful, and a really hot day.
Yeah, very hot day.
And we did it. We made it.
Yeah.
And that was just over 7 years ago, the day we got married.
We got married 7 years ago, but we've not been apart. We've been living together since December of 2010, when you came for Christmas.
Yes, except for the 2 weeks that I went back home once to see my family without you.
Yeah, but you lived here by then.
We haven't been apart
distance then.
In, well, almost 8 years then, I guess.
And that is the long and short of our story.
That is our story. So it's been brought to my attention that I interrupt him a lot. So apologies for that. This is new, and I think he interrupted me a lot too, but we're getting used to this. But stay tuned. We have lots of tips, lots of ideas, lots of stories, and we hope to share it all with you.
So thanks for listening. If you have any questions for us, our website's longdistancetomarriage.com, where you can find our social media profiles, as well as send us an email, and we do read everything.
And let us know if there's anything in particular you want us to cover, or any specific questions you have about our experiences. But thanks so much, guys. Bye!